Welcome to the Retired Excited Podcast. Retired Excited, the show where we give retired and want to be retired folk a look at how great retired life can be. Here we talk to men and women who are happily retired and loving their life. We explore the techniques, activities, beliefs, and excitement of these happy retirees and examine how every Tom, Dick, and Mary can benefit from their experience. Together, we will delve into what retired happiness really looks like and how anyone can achieve it.
Here is your host, Henry Shapiro.
Hey folks, Henry here at Retired Excited, the show providing inspiration for people who are nearly retired, newly retired, or say they're never going to retire. If you're nearing retirement and fearful of what lies ahead, you don't need to be. If you're already retired and wondering how to fill your days, then this show is exactly for you. Here we talk to retired people doing things that make them happy. Things from stamp collecting to cruising, from dancing to touring the world on a motorbike. There's an exciting stage of life to be enjoyed after full-time work, and it's got nothing to do with your financial situation or social position. We talk to everyday retired people who are living the life they want, and we talk to a few professionals to get expert advice. And I chip in with some of my own experiences.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Retired Excited. And this is going to be a fun episode, as you'll hear. Today, I'm at the home of Philip Jackson and Susan Anderson. Now, Philip has retired maybe 3 years ago, but he continues on doing some part-time work. And that's really a key to a lot of people who've have exciting and fulfilling time after retirement. He's had a very responsible job in the past as a teacher, and he taught for 35 years. And then, as happens to lots of teachers, as he progressed through the system, went on to more administration, which he didn't particularly like. Anyhow, he was looking forward to his retirement, and the nice thing about his retirement was he was able to do it on his own terms. And that is a big thing, and it's something for everybody, I think, to look at. It's better to retire than be retired, if that's at all possible. So now he's got a couple of really interesting, and I'm going to call them hobbies or fascinations, or you could really call them obsessions, or particularly one of them is an obsession, and they are genealogy and birding. He's a bird watcher. And bird watching has taken him to all parts of Australia. He lives in Victoria, right down in the southeast corner of Australia, and has taken him round Australia, up to the very northern area, up to the very western area, thousands and thousands of kilometres. He's met lots and lots of fascinating people, and he loves it, as you're going to hear. Perhaps it'd be better if I let Philip tell the story. So,
now, you'll have to speak clearly because, you know, I'm a bit deaf.
You're a bit deaf?
What? Speak up, Henry.
Is that about as loud as you're going
to
talk?
Yeah, that's about it. Is that okay?
That's fine. I just need to talk at more or less the same level.
No worries!
Well, welcome, listeners. Here we are today at the home of Philip Jackson with one L and Susan Anderson. Philip, where are we?
In Ivanhoe, Victoria, Australia.
Yeah. You're right. You got that right. And we're sitting in a magnificent room. The house is on a hillside with a monster picture window overlooking gorgeous greenery. Fabulous view. Let's start, Philip. And you understand that this is a podcast about people who are nearly retired or newly retired. Ruffians and reprobates.
Yes.
So let's talk about before you retired, because you retired fairly recently.
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
But since then I've done a bit of work, so we can go through that if you...
You've just ruined it, yes. So tell us what you were doing prior. Okay, what's brought you up to retirement?
Okay. Well, I was a teacher for 35 years, and like a lot of teachers over time, I got into more and more administration, less and less classroom, and then I finally retired, but actually went back into the classroom for... ran a program for vocational work, a new program at the school I was at for 18 months, and then I decided when I was 62, I think, 62, 63, that it was time to retire from full-time employment. So after that I quit, retired, said farewell, but I continued to do emergency teaching, what we call CRT, casual relief teaching, and I still do that now occasionally. I use it to justify paying for things.
Excellent.
So I set a target, like a new set of binoculars that were very expensive.
Right.
For my bird watching, which I'm sure we shall come to.
We shall. Because, and then I can listeners, Philip has two passions in life. So the second one, after his wife and family, is bird watching, and we'll talk about that shortly. Sure. So just, you said you had retired maybe 3 years ago.
Yes.
And you're now 62. Is there some magic in the education department about retiring at 59?
No, you can, if you're in one of the superannuation schemes, a special superannuation scheme that doesn't exist anymore, you could retire before you were 55, if that's what you're thinking of, and you'd get a lump sum payout, and then you could go back teaching, which is what I did. Right. But then I went back teaching for another 7 years after that, or went back to a school for 7 years. I did administrative work, and I was an assistant principal for some of that time. But no, I could have stayed on for a bit longer, I think. But I decided that there were too many other things to get done. Too many birds to see.
Right. Well, so as you approached retirement, were you happy about that? You were looking forward to it?
Yeah, I was looking forward to it because it was sort of on my terms. When I initially gave up administration, when I was about 59, and I thought about retiring then at 60, but I just didn't feel like it, didn't seem right. I felt as though, oh no, I don't want to be stuck at home all day. Mm-hmm. But 2 years later, I thought, I wouldn't mind being stuck at home all day. So that's right. Exactly what I did. But I kept up the CRT work. Now, a lot of teachers hate going back to emergency teaching, but I'd have to say, and it's come as a pleasant surprise, I love it. It's all care and no responsibility. I only go to the one school, which is a school I'd previously been at. The only downside is that they often ring you early in the morning. I get a phone call at about 6:30 to say, can you come in today? So 7 up, o'clock. Yeah. Well, I'm up fairly early anyway.
Right.
The early bird, Henry.
Yes. The early bird.
But I can say no. I don't like to say no too often because then I fear the phone calls may cease. But I often say no if I've got something on, if I have things to do.
Right.
Or I say yes and think, there you go. A pleasant day. As I say, all care and no responsibility. It avoids CRT work, all the things that most teachers hate. Yard duty, preparation, correction, parent-teacher nights and reports. None of that. Meetings is the thing teachers most hate.
Meetings.
So I get into my car as I watch all the teachers trudging off to the meeting rooms. And I think, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And you earn a dollar or two.
Not bad money. Yeah, it's quite good
money. To do stuff that you want to do.
And I organise it so that I only earn enough to get under the tax threshold, so I don't pay any tax for the year. And with the tax I pay, I get back. So
perfect.
Yeah, so it's perfect.
And see, you're leading up to retirement. The big day comes. Do you get a gold watch?
No, I get a... An occasion.
An occasion.
So lots invited, lots of people, and there were speeches and a presentation, and it wasn't a gold watch, but it was some books that I'd carefully worded, people that I wanted beforehand.
You did it on your terms, that's terrific.
It is. I sort of did too. I did that early one, then decided I'd wanted to come back. So I got a present there, but then I went to another school and got another present. So. But the first present I wasn't happy with, so the second time round I made it quite clear what I was after.
Right.
Don't ask, you don't get.
Is that a philosophy of yours in life?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay.
And I think the older you get, you do get pushier and grumpier because you care less what people think. Don't you find that, Henry?
Grumpy, certainly grumpy, yes. Was Susan pleased to have you home?
I think so. Well, she hadn't, my wife hadn't retired, Susan hadn't retired.
Has she retired now?
Yes, just, in just. Fact, officially, yesterday.
Get out of town.
Yesterday at 5 o'clock. She's had all the holidays, but she was paid for all of that.
Right.
The summer break holidays. But in fact, officially at 5 o'clock, she retired yesterday. And already I've had an inkling of what it's like to have Susan home all day. And
so
I'm only going back
are,
to work full
we're
time.
Here, we're here with a nearly retired and a newly retired in the one household.
We are.
That's frightening. Yes.
And Susan is at the stage now where she's making lists
oh,
of
dear.
Things to be done.
Oh, dear. Yes.
I have to rush off fairly early in the morning.
I know that story. Okay, so you've worked, you've managed your own retirement.
Yes.
You've got superannuation, so
yes.
Finances are more
okay,
or less
yes.
under control.
Oh, yeah.
You can earn a little bit of money at your own whim.
That's right.
For extras that you want.
I like to set a target for and head towards that with my running away from home money, I call it.
Terrific. And so before you retired, what did you expect that you were going to be doing?
Well, I've always been a keen bird watcher, so I knew that birding would be an important part of that. I'd also started, this is, you know, the tragic old coot interest, isn't it? I'd also started looking at the family tree and got into genealogy a bit. It's tragically common in old coots, I know. And so I do a bit of that if it's the weather's crook and I can fit in some time. I either do it at home or go to the library where I can get free access to a lot of the sites I'm too mean to pay for. But I find plenty of other things to do. I go for, try and go for a walk every day.
Right.
I catch up with people. I suppose it's common sense. A lot of my friends have retired too. I have an elderly mother who I have to, well, I don't have to, but I do try and see at least twice a week and go and see her.
You did say when I can fit it in, so it sounds as though you're busy.
Well, I'm sort of busy and I'm not bad at sitting around reading either.
Right.
Which is something I found very difficult in the beginning. I used to feel guilty when I first retired, if I sat down and just started reading during the day. That seemed
yes.
like a naughty indulgence.
Naughty,
but,
yes.
But now I've managed to squash that.
So,
and I can even fit in a bit of a nanny nap in the afternoon sometimes, have a read, and then I look at the time and I think, oh.
Time for tea.
It's time to have a drink. 5 o'clock already.
5 o'clock. Tell us about looking back at the family history. Have you found any naughtiness in the family?
It's very difficult because my cousin, who's a historian, is an academic, or he's retired too, but he was in fact a professor. But he's written a fantastic book. If I could give it a plug, it's called.
Go for it.
What is it called?
Family what is it matters? Called?
I've only read it a couple of times. But it's about mum's side of the family. So I've taken it on to research my father's side, about which I knew very little. Dad was an only child and he died. His father had died when Dad was only a few months old. Well, that was the family story. We always thought, my brother and I, that he must have been an illegitimate child. But
right.
I had to eat my negative thoughts because I got a copy of his birth certificate. And in fact, he did die when my dad was 3 months old.
Okay.
Appendicitis attack and so peritonitis. So there you go.
So how do you go about even delving into all that stuff?
Well, the internet, like everything, what a gift the internet is to birding. And not to birding, to
genealogy.
Family history, genealogy, to everything.
Right.
So I just look up, there's 1,001 sites that I've bookmarked and you can look at ancestry.com, which I had for quite a while, and get the bare bones, the births, deaths and marriages, but then you get other sites and you look up newspaper records or birth records or church records, everything. It's all there. Most of it's free. It's unbelievable.
Now, you've got a couple of kids.
Yes.
What do they think about you doing all this?
Well, they're indulgent. I say they don't share the interest, so they both... I read they were given a copy of the family tree book and they did read it, but with the birding they're very indulgent. I went out yesterday, for example, when I came home, my son said, oh, did you see your bird? in a way that indicated he was being polite.
Yes.
And he says things like, oh, what was the best bird you saw?
Right.
And I'll say, brown song-like, say, and he'll go, oh, I've seen lots of them. Oh, there's some of them in the backyard this afternoon.
Now, are you going to tell me the name of the book and who the author is?
So I can put it in the show notes. Yes, Graham Davison. And I'm just trying to think of the title. It's The Story of the Hewitts and it's Family...
Graham with a H or an E?
A-E, G-R-A-E-M. Davison without a D. And it's Family Matters.
Okay, we'll get it up in a moment. We'll get it later. So are you finding that your memory is going?
Yes, it is. It's only a book I helped work on and did lots of things for and went on trips with Graham. I've read it twice, but the memory is completely gone.
So it's a story about your mother's side of family.
Family, though, a Hewitts, H-E-W-E-T-T. But it's really, it makes it sound as though it'd only be of interest to the family, but Graham links it in with various events, why they migrated and migration during the 1850s. They arrived just before the gold rush, but they were in Castlemaine. It was a widow with eight children who came out on a boat.
Yep.
And they, a number of them met their future partners, women and men. There were a group of women on the boat who were subsidised migrant called Distressed Needle Women. It's a fantastic title, and indeed, one of my great-great-great-grandfather married one of these Distressed Needle Women. She became, as two of the others did as well, one of the others did as well. So, but it also links to the gold rush and then looks at Methodism in earlier, some of them came from Wales and...
You can't even imagine these days a single woman, without a husband, coming out here with eight kids.
And what a journey. We'll never know. That's one of the delights of, I suppose, and mysteries of family history. What motivated her? Graham was able to look up that they were called yeoman farmers, and they lost the title of the land, but there was trouble with the maintaining a farm and with a large family. But why she chose to come to Australia, we'll probably never know. But she came out in 1850.
Did she have something to come to, or was it just an adventure?
No other family here.
Lobbed in Australia,
lobbed in Port Phillip Bay. And funnily enough, the eight of them then dispersed over Victoria. One went to Warrnambool, was a butcher in Warrnambool. Castlemaine, Longwood, which is near Euroa, they went to Euroa, they were millers there. Another group went down to in Gippsland. One of them died just out of Albury. He never married. He was died the swaggy's death by a campfire. there was all of those, and they spread. They sort of remained in contact. One of them, Jane, never married. She died in the old colonist's home
in Clifton Hill.
Clifton Hill, and yeah. Mum remembers going to see her. She lived to. They all lived to be a great age, the women particularly.
Mm.
As they still do. My mother's over 100, so...
Your mother?
Yes.
Okay. Are you still in contact with any of the descendants?
Well, a few of them, and because of the book and we had a launch, we've caught up there, and certainly I see a lot of my cousins.
Well, we've got to talk about birding, as you mentioned.
Yes.
What is it?
Well, it's...
He's spreading his hands in a typical gesture right at the moment.
It's an obsession.
Right.
Like a lot of things. I'm thinking now I may have developed OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, but you be the judge of this.
I shall.
With my bird, I keep lists of birds that I've seen.
Yes.
So I keep a life list, an Australian life list. I keep an international list for when I travel. I keep a house list, a year list, a Victoria list, and a work list. Now, Henry, OCD?
Absolutely OCD.
It's tragic, isn't it?
It is a bit tragic. You've just tipped over onto the dark side.
I think I have.
Right.
And I'm what's classed in birding, in some areas, as a twitcher. Though I'm happy to... And twitchers are people who actually do that, keep lists, and count the number of birds, bird species they've seen.
Right.
So, and they have certain names. And I do twitch, I do keep a record of that. But I'm happy enough to, I go for walks down to the local park and I'm happy enough to sit and watch there, having no expectation of seeing a new bird. I don't see too many new birds in Victoria anymore, so I have to... So I start my morning. I often begin the day by checking my emails, and there's email sites where any new bird that's arrived is posted, and on Facebook, and there's also a couple of websites.
So is that the objective, or is that a biggie to, I've seen a new bird,
yes,
or there is a new bird in, let's say, Victoria?
That's right. Well, recently, for example, there's been a couple of rarities. Mega rarities, we call them. One of them was a paradise shell duck, first time it's ever seen in Australia. I should have told you
to clench your buttocks.
I should have said clench your buttocks before I said it. Paradise shell duck was found in a lake, coastal lake, west of Canberra. But so birders from all over Australia were catching planes and driving overnight and whatever. But I just didn't have an opportunity to get up there. I was going to go up and stay with some friends in Canberra and drive over, but it's gone. They think it may have been eaten by a fox. So my chance
of seeing... And how many of them was there?
Just the one. One. Yes, just the one.
Looking all right. Have I pressed the button there? Well, listeners, if this sounds a bit different from how it was before, that's because we've had an adventure in between time. The machine stopped. The recorder stopped. And so I did the only reasonable thing. I panicked. Philip settled me down and Susan gave us lunch in the in-between time. So where were we, Philip?
We were just starting on the joys of bird watching. But before we do that, if I could just mention the name of the book.
The name of
the... Lost Relations by Graham Davison. I'm sure you can put the details...
In the show notes.
In the show notes. Lost Relations. Highly recommended. Not just for genealogists, but... historians and
etc.
Okay, let's just get back to birding, shall we?
Oh, all right.
The joys of birding.
Very well. Now, you mentioned that you're a twitcher.
Yes.
Tell me how that works. What do twitchers do?
Well, it's really just someone who, the word came, people who saw a new species and got terribly excited and started twitching, I'm embarrassed to say.
Oh.
I don't do that, but it is exciting seeing a new bird, and particularly when you've gone a lot of effort to find it. If you've travelled a long way, if you've waited a long time. We went over to out of Perth or Western Australia to look for a western whipbird. It probably took us 16, 18 or more hours to find one over several days.
You were sitting somewhere... out in the cold and the wind. And
yes, we were. We were in Heathland. They're birds that call about once every 20 minutes. And so you have to wait and then hone them down. They're very secretive, but we finally saw them.
So how do you know it was that one calling? Have you got the calls in your head?
Yes, you study the calls beforehand.
Okay.
And you can get apps for your phone by some of the bird guides that have not only pictures and photographs, distribution maps... but also have the calls, so you can check them up beforehand. Some birds respond to calls. It's called playback, and you can play a call, and they'll come in. Some bird watchers don't like to do that because they think it disturbs the birds, and we don't do playback very often. A bit unethical.
It's one of the
grey areas in birding.
Right.
We certainly don't use playback around nesting birds or birds that are courting because it sort of throws them out a bit. And a lot of birds don't respond to playback anyway, so we don't use it very much, but we do occasionally. Western whipbirds didn't seem to respond at all, so...
Right.
And so you keep lists and you keep records, I said. But you can also get great delight, as I've mentioned, in just watching birds in your backyard. And that's where most birders begin.
So would your typical birder have been keeping budgies?
Quite frequently.
Yeah.
I know a number of birders who had big collections of aviary birds and then moved on to...
Someone's retiring and they've been keeping a few birds in the backyard and they think, oh, I really enjoy this and I want to get into it.
Yep.
How would they enter their interest?
Well, you end up knowing your local area, parks and gardens and rivers and creeks and people... Almost invariably, people who are birders are people who are interested in the environment. Okay. They're people who like to go into the bush, if not into the wild, certainly into local parks and gardens and reserves. And they start off by just enjoying that, and then they focus more and more on the birds. A lot of birders have other interests as well, you know, orchids or botany or whatever.
Yeah. So how do you...
Let's say you just notice in your backyard that there's a couple of birds you don't know, or there's a bird that comes every day. Often people start to feed the birds or have a bird bath, and then you want to know what they are. That's how it starts.
Okay.
So if you're starting, for a beginner, you really do need a bird guide. You can get one for your phone.
Right.
Pizzy, and you can put these in your notes, but there's any number of them.
In books.
And you can, Pizzy and Knight is a good one, Slater, Morecambe. Australia's blessed with some excellent guides.
Yeah.
You can pick them up on eBay secondhand.
Yeah.
Then you can get them on the same ones, a number of apps you can get as an app on your phone. You do have to pay for them. But you can also get apps of common birds, Australian birds, for free as a free app.
Okay.
Good way to start. And you probably need to get fairly soon a pair of binoculars, which can be...
How much money?
Very expensive.
Very expensive.
Very expensive indeed.
Or
much cheaper. And again, there's websites that'll tell you good binoculars to get, what to get, but you can get a pair for $150 or less.
$150, $120
something like that.
And that'll be satisfactory for
perfectly
a
if you're just starting out.
So what's the difference between your good binoculars and your really, really good binoculars?
Oh, well, there's magnification and there's field of vision. Good binoculars let in more light. They have much greater clarity. And different people that you can look up sites that talk about the magnification. Most birders have 8x42s or 10x42s.
There's some people have really expensive.
They do indeed.
In my terms, expensive, but I suppose if this is your hobby...
That's right. Well, you start off, my binoculars were rather expensive. That was one of the reasons why I was, my current ones, one of the reasons why I was working. I was saving up. I like to, if I'm working as, when I say working part-time, emergency teaching,
yeah.
I like to set a goal.
Yep.
So it's either an apartment in New York, as one of my goals was.
Right.
Or my binoculars, and they were $3,000. But I certainly wouldn't recommend people starting off with Swarovski's or Zeiss or Leica, the top brands, but you can get some very good pairs. Try getting a pair secondhand.
Yes.
eBay.
So here I am. I'm interested in pursuing a bird watching interest. Yes. I get myself a field guide.
Yep.
I might get some apps on my phone.
Yep.
I have a bit of a study of that. Do I need... Yep.
Exactly. And you start noting which birds are there. You'll notice as time goes on that they vary from season to season.
Yeah.
Different birds in different habitats. You start off in your backyard and then you start working out which birds are natives, which ones are introduced, males from females. And it all starts as your knowledge grows. It does go on and on.
It goes on and on.
And it's endlessly fascinating, as I can tell from your face, Henry.
I might get into this. I think you will.
I'm seeing a spark of... I think there's a bit of birder in you.
Bit of recognition.
I think there is. And so that's how it starts. You end up... I mean, good news, you'll need, if you get too obsessive, you'll need a telescope, which are much more expensive, but I certainly wouldn't recommend that at the beginning. There are websites for beginners.
Yeah.
Join a society like Birds Australia. They have excursions for beginners and... there's books and all sorts of information. The web is an absolute fund. There's several Facebook sites of Bird ID where you can post pictures and people will tell you what they were.
If you Google it, I guess you'd find them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
you can Google all of those. The birding world, like almost every other world, is very web friendly.
Savvy. Yeah.
Very web savvy.
It seems to me that you're going to be spending a lot of time outdoors.
Yes.
So that'll be an attraction. For me.
It's a focus for a walk. See, I try to go for a walk every day.
Mm-hmm.
So now I usually take my spotters and my binoculars and see if I can see something.
And away you go.
A lot of other people who are birders, fishermen, for example, are often good birders because they spend time sitting quietly.
Yes.
Good way of finding a bird.
Finding a bird. You see, I know that in the past you and three friends have gotten away in a car and gone a long way away.
Yep.
And I assumed that it was just some mates going out in the country to drink and get away from their everyday responsibilities.
Well, that's true too.
Right.
But you can make birds as the justification for that. So I'm lucky that I have a group of friends I go birding with, and we try and do a big trip every year to, well, we've been to Cape York and Western Australia, Perth, and, well, not so much Perth, but certainly the southwest tip, been up to Darwin a couple of times, Cairns, to Eyre Peninsula, most notably to Alice Springs, or west of Alice Springs, 800k west of Alice Springs.
There's nothing there.
Absolutely nothing there except one of the rarest and most beautiful birds in Australia, the princess parrot, which we were lucky enough to find after much drama. We were well out of a little Aboriginal settlement called Kirikara, which I was delighted to read is the most isolated community in Australia. At about 200k's from there, a place called Jupiter Well, or near there, we found these parrots. We were extremely lucky. We found a flock of 30-odd.
Gracious me. Yeah.
We were beside ourselves with excitement, Henry. I almost, but not quite, twitched.
I can tell.
So that's at one end, the vaguely obsessive end, but it's also wherever you go. You know, you can have a lovely holiday in the Gold Coast or Port Douglas or wherever, and you can find a few hours to go out birding, or you can just sit on the beach and see what birds you can see, because wherever you go, you'll find different birds. You can do a bit of research beforehand.
Yeah. So you can be doing that and your partner can be doing something else, like shopping.
Like shopping, indeed.
Yes.
So wherever we go, we try and fit in. I try and fit in a day or half a day's birding while Susan does something else. And then...
Now, listeners, if this all sounds a bit fanatical, is this fanatical, Philip? Would you call yourself a fanatic?
Bordering on a fanatic,
on a fanatic.
Well, yes, I am a fanatic. But you don't have to get into it. And I do have other interests. You know, there's the genealogy. I try and see a movie every week.
Well, I was going to say that Philip has had some health issues just recently, fairly serious health issues. And in the middle of these health issues, he asked Susan to drive him 4 hours to go and have a look at a bird.
I didn't put it that way.
No.
When I said to Susan, oh, look, I'm feeling a bit better. Let's have a little break.
Right.
Portland, Port Fairy, that's a lovely area. Let's go down there. And then when we got there, I confessed that there was a rare bird that I was after, the Cape Gannet.
Right.
There's a pair of them they're found in South Africa, but these had somehow flown the Atlantic
and there they were.
Over. Is it the Atlantic that flown or the Indian? Anyway, they'd come over.
From a very long way.
From the long way. And there they were with, another colony of Australasian gannets.
So you did see them?
I did see them. It was what I'd call a fairly unpleasant twitch in that it was difficult conditions, very windy, difficult to identify. The birds are differentiated by a long streak down the throat. But as when they're roosting, their heads are under their wings most of the time. You can't see that. You have to rely on them to have a bit of a stretch as they do every now and then.
Right.
There's other differences too, but... After many unpleasant hours looking through the scope through a wire fence, because the rookery is fenced off quite rightly, one bird that had been looking different, so I'd been keeping an eye on it, finally lifted its head up and I saw the streak. And then I was off home, or back off to the
so
motel.
Was it worth it? I mean, you've got 8 hours of travel, you've got motel, you've got Susan.
But we also had a nice time in Portland. It's a lovely part of the world.
Yes. Okay.
And so we enjoy that too. That's one of the joys of birding. You get to go to gorgeous places.
I mentioned there'd be
people... fabulous birding around Alice Springs, and it's the most wonderful town.
It's really taking you all around Australia.
All around Australia. I've just got part of the Kimberley to get done, and I'm hoping to do that next year or the year after.
Are there still
birds up there?
Yeah, is there still birds which may or may not be in Australia which you have not sighted?
Oh, yes, quite a few. Oh, lots. Because a lot of the places I go to, you don't end up getting them all. So at the moment I'm mopping up, I'll have to go back to Cape York. I've got about four that I missed there, and there's one here and one there. So it just provides a focus.
Why don't you just, I don't want to say lie, why don't you just make believe? Does that go on in your...
Not really. Well, no. You have your doubts. And people who... there's a special word that's in birding circles called a stringer. They're people who don't really lie, but they're very keen to... Yes, I think I saw the black stripe or the this or that. Oh, that looks like it. No, I'm pretty sure they're very keen to find the bird.
Right.
But birders who lie usually get caught out at some stage.
Yeah.
And not that many do that because, Henry, is there any satisfaction?
There's no point,
I could say, oh, I've seen a, what's one bird I'm still after, a black bittern. Oh, there's a black bittern, but is that satisfying?
No. Not if you haven't really seen it.
No, not if you haven't really seen it at all.
So are you saying it is competitive or it is not competitive?
Well, there are lists on the net of birders' totals.
All right, so there's...
So there's lists, and I suppose there is a competitive nature of birders, and there's a... people do publish their totals and try and get more and more, but generally I find birders are very cooperative. Always willing to help a beginner and point out things, and okay. Mostly, 90% of birders, they pass on their information. I always do research before my trips and email people.
So you go knowing what you're looking for.
Yes, and where to find it, often, nowadays, because all that information is readily available. People publish their trip reports, and so you can find out what they've seen, and if you want more information, you can email them, and they generally are more than happy to help.
Okay.
So it's a good interest that you can work on many levels. You know, top birders often spend a fortune on A, their equipment, but B, and B, their travelling.
Yeah.
But also on guides and trips. There are trips to the Cocos Islands and Christmas Islands and Ashmore Reef, for example, where you get quite rare birds. But they're very expensive. It's, you know, thousands of dollars. But you don't have to do that. You can go down to your local park and keep a list there or just watch what the birds are doing and seeing if they're nesting or moving on or fighting or whatever.
Like you, they could have many lists.
They could do of people they're watching. They're going, oh, that man's back again. I don't like the look of him.
Yes. Skulking around in the local park.
That's right.
Okay.
You've always, so, just a word of warning, you've always got to be careful of using your binoculars near schools too. It's not a good look.
I can imagine.
Around here there's a school that's famous for it's got some lovely gum trees that frequently have scaly-breasted parrots in them, but you just simply can't. You've got to wait for the holidays to go looking
before
for them.
Before you can look, yeah. So you're birding.
Yes.
You're outdoors in the fresh air.
Yes.
You might be a... you may have another interest, which would be fishing or orchids, as you say.
Or walking.
Or photography. I imagine photography is big.
Huge in birding, and many birders are photographers. And again, the equipment can vary. But a lot of people start off, they've already got a camera that's got a reasonable lens, and they can just start off by photographing common birds, getting a portfolio of good photographs of the birds of their suburb or their house or whatever.
Typically, how far away from a bird are... I know it's an impossible question, but are we looking at something 100 metres away? Are we looking at something...
It can be. When you're using a telescope, you know, they can be quite distant. Yeah. You can still get good looks, and it depends on your equipment, but usually you can get reasonable views with binoculars of birds 20 feet away or 10 feet away. Some people have problems because their binoculars don't focus close enough. You know, if it's only... Binoculars have in their specifications how close.
Yes.
So 6 feet's usually about the...
You probably wouldn't need them if it's only 6 feet away.
No.
In a cage.
In a cage, certainly not.
Right. So when we look at your interests...
Yes.
They are genealogy.
Yes.
Birding. You've done a lot of travelling.
A lot of travelling.
Friends, because you've travelled with friends and so on.
Yes, and bird with friends. Go to the movies with friends.
Go to the movies.
We're keen on, both Susan and I, keen on art, so we love to go to art galleries wherever we go.
It's a full life.
It's a very busy life. So, but I was determined when I was retired, there was one thing I would never, ever say, and I haven't, but I'm going to say it now. But I think it's something to be avoided. Never say to people, particularly if they're working, I don't know how I ever fitted work in before I retired. It's an extremely irritating saying.
But good, isn't it?
It's true, but I don't think it needs to be said.
So for someone who's coming up to retirement and is a bit nervous about retiring, and will I or won't I, what give us some advice.
Well, I think go for it. If you've got doubts, if it's an option, do it. I didn't try and get part-time work, casual work. Phase it out. How you go.
Yeah.
But I think you'll find that the days are filled fairly profitably. And I think you probably need to start some interests or activities and see if you enjoy them. If you haven't, most people have interests already.
Yes.
Yeah, and work on those. See if you can extend them or expand them. Start planning trips and looking at places to go and things to do. I don't think just retiring and saying, oh, I'll fill in my days doing something. You need to. I think you do need to think ahead. The other thing I haven't mentioned, I'm a very keen gardener, so that takes up time too.
Yeah. No wonder you're busy all the time.
And my wife has lists, as I say.
Lists.
Lists of things to be done.
That's a good spot to wind up.
Okay.
Philip, thank you very much.
Thank you, Henry.
And you've given us some excellent advice.
Okay, I hope it's been useful.
It certainly has.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Okay, well, as you can tell, we had a lot of fun putting together this podcast. Philip is a naturally happy kind of a person, and it rubbed off on me, as you heard. Now, what are the takeaways from this podcast? Well, it's these things. He was able to retire on his own terms. He was able to go on and earn little bits and pieces of money after he had retired, which was terrific, really, because he was able to buy those few things that he wanted just to round out his hobbies. And they were great hobbies, and they really complemented each other, didn't they? He had an indoor hobby and an outdoor hobby. He's been a bird watcher or a birder, twitcher, for a long time. And since he retired, he's been able to expand that interest and get to lots more places. And bird watching, I think, is a fantastic thing. If you're at all interested in birds, formalising it almost into being a twitcher or a bird watcher is terrific, because it allows you to get out and about and, importantly, be part of a community. As we're going along through these podcasts, you're going to become to appreciate even more that being part of a community is what keeps people happy, being part of a community is what keeps people healthy, and being part of a community is really, really, really important to your well-being as you're getting older after retirement. Now, you might say his hobbies were obsessions, and they were obsessions. You'd only have to see his face to understand that, and you could hear it in his voice. They were obsessions. So, financially, he's got his superannuation, as we call it here in Australia, or pension going on for him. So that wasn't an issue. And he was able to, as I said, to earn a few bits extra to round out the various trips and whatnot that he wanted to make. Let me know what you think about Philip. He's a naturally happy-go-lucky person. He really spreads that amongst the people who he's in contact with, and that's great. I think he's a great, great character. So let me know what you thought about the podcast, what you think about genealogy, what you think about bird watching. You can leave comments on the site as always, or contact me directly through henry@retiredexcited.com. I look forward to seeing you next week. Bye now.
I like to get that out for sure.
I'm in.
That's terrific.
That was interesting.
What a good idea.